You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio. And we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And that was a pretty interesting week we just got through here in the Northeast. Well, I guess the whole East Coast, but we started the week out with an earthquake here. Like from Washington up to here, right? And I felt it. I was at work. The floor started shaking. The table started shaking. I felt it. I thought at first that maybe I was just really tired and my legs were starting to wobble, but then I realized that the whole room was shaking. So we started out the week with an earthquake, which is kind of exciting for us here because we're in a non-active seismic region, although apparently there's a huge fault that runs basically right under New York. It just doesn't do that much, or we don't feel it. So we had our little earthquake, and then, of course, we had the lead up to the storm of the century. And you know, there was a lot of hype. Now, I know the storm did major damage in a lot of places, upstate New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, really bad, terrible flooding, awful stuff is going on. But here in New York, we were so hyped up about it, and there was so much scaring going on that, you know, we needed to make sure that we were really prepped for it. So Friday night, I got out of work. We got in the car. We drove like mad upstate to get to Tiny Bungalow. Now, Tiny Bungalow is not in the Catskills, so we were okay. We were outside of the zone. But, you know, we drove up there. It was like 10 o'clock at night, lashed everything down, brought the patio furniture inside the house, put it on the porch, tied everything together, put the grill, put the propane tank somewhere, like completely prepared for like the Wizard of Oz tornado scene. And I figured the storm was going to come and knock everything out of the garden. So I picked my eggplants. I picked whatever was left, thinking I didn't want them to get blown away. Then we madly drove home, got back at midnight, got up early Saturday morning, raced over to where I keep my bees, went over there, took a ratchet strap and ratcheted the beehive down. We carried a big boulder back from the house. Put a boulder on top of the beehive because I was afraid that Irene was going to knock it down. We did that on Saturday just as the rain started because I thought, well, if the wind knocks the hive over, at least the hive will hold together. It won't go, you know, flying apart into this like windy, wet ball of soaked bees and wood and comb and be a total disaster. It'll just knock over and it'll stay ratcheted together and then I'll go lift it up. Well, of course, it was all useless. So we did all that. That was Saturday. Then, you know, what did you do? You went home and you waited. It's what everybody did. You just sat in your house for 2 days and waited for the storm to come. So the storm prep was done and we had 2 days and nothing to do because, you know, the media was saying, if you go outside, that's going to be the end of you. So we just waited. I guess actually we went out for a walk both days, you know, took a chance. So I decided to use my time somewhat productively as opposed to just, you know, sitting around watching American Pickers, which is what I've been doing lately. So since we're on storm lockdown mode, I thought it's time to get some projects done. And one of the projects, of course, has been to bottle all that honey that I harvested a week or so ago. So I finally, you know, my bees produced a nice amount of honey. I had taken the supers off the hive, like the super, not supers, whenever, almost 2 weeks ago. And it has just been sitting on my kitchen table in these 2 1-gallon buckets, just waiting for me to get around to breaking it down into jars. And I finally thought, you know, said, okay, it's time. And for 2 years now that I've been a beekeeper, I've been saving all my little jars in anticipation of harvesting honey. So I have all these little jars. And I even went through the fridge and pulled out all the old little jars from the fridge full of like crusty old jam and like, you know, 7-year-old mango chutney that I'll never eat. You know, that stuff that never goes bad, but eventually you reach a point where you're like, this isn't food anymore. So it was good. It was like a fridge purge also, which was very productive. So I got rid of all that. And, you know me. You've been listening to the show for a long time. And you know that the long, tight fingers of the depression still reach out to me from their third generation grip. And, you know, and I do things like I save glass jars. Not obsessively, not like a hoarder, but you know, you buy something, comes in a nice glass jar. Why throw the glass jar out? You should save it because you can use it. And we always have stuff to put in it because we buy stuff in bulk, like popcorn and quinoa and stuff. We buy it in bulk. So it's always good to have glass jars around. See? And now I had to bottle all this honey, so I had glass jars. So, you know, they're functional objects with years and years of use left in them. Why throw them away? So, as we waited for the storm to rage outside, which it kind of didn't, ever. I bottled up all my first honey harvest, and it turned out I had even more than I thought. I got 25 pounds from the single shallow, which I think is pretty good. I don't know. Sometimes people say, oh, you can get 40 pounds, but that seems extreme. And so, you know, while we waited for the big non-event, I soaked all those jars. I cleaned them out. I scraped off all those old labels. I washed out the caps. I dried them out. I filled them up. Made a big, huge mess. But you know what's a beautiful thing about honey? It's totally water-soluble, even in cold water. It just washes right off. Now, I still had hot water. The storm never really did anything, so we had plenty of water. Although we did, you know, fill up the bathtub and all that stuff. And then we wound up with a giant bathtub full of cold, old water. Which then I felt guilty draining, because I thought, oh, this is a big waste of water. But anyway, so we bottled it all up, And I started thinking, I was like, you know, looking at my kitchen table, and I was like, wow, I have 25 pounds of honey sitting here on my kitchen table. And so if you're facing what's being told to you as the, you know, biggest storm in history, or at least in recorded history, you know, with the potential to basically knock us totally off the grid for, you know, months on end, what better food to have around than 25 pounds of honey? I mean, if you have to have something around, that's pretty good to have around. It's like, honey's like, should be the food of the survivalist gods. Like, it should be the symbol of the survivalists. You know, like, the guys in the Michigan militia bunkers should fill up those bunkers with honey. Because honey never spoils. It never goes bad. It's one of the only foods that never, ever goes bad. It never spoils. It never molds. Never. The only way it can happen is if water gets in there. If you get water in your honey, the water attracts the mold and then it can spoil. But if you keep it, you know, high and dry, sealed up tight, it lasts forever, like really forever. Nothing ever happens. It might crystallize, but nothing bad ever happens to it. And that is really amazing. If you think about other foods, eventually pretty much everything goes bad. Dried beans and grains, they keep forever too if bugs don't get to them. But honey really keeps forever and ever and ever. And the reason we know this is because, well, we just know it, but because they found edible honey in the tombs in Egypt. So like in the tombs of the Pharaoh, you know, whatever that was, 6,000 years ago, I don't remember. Still edible, still sweet, still ready to eat. You know, years and years and years into the afterlife, if you were buried in Egypt, you had honey to keep you going for thousands of years. So I thought, if Irene was really going to knock us completely off of our asses and the whole system was going to go down, we could just sit there in the kitchen and spoon honey out of the jar for like a month or two until the bodegas, you know, got back up and running and we could go buy bags of chips and beer and stuff like that again, which is what New York eats. That's what we live on, bodega food. And as long as we had it in tightly sealed little jars, we were okay. Now, the reason you have to keep it so sealed up is because honey is hygroscopic. That's hygroscopic with a G, not hydroscopic, although you would think it was hydroscopic. And I always thought the word was hydroscopic. And then I went to do the research for the show and I realized I've been wrong all these years saying hydroscopic. A hydroscope is something you use to see underwater. Hygroscopic is something that attracts water. Something that is hygroscopic attracts water. There's a whole species family of mushrooms called Hygrophoroides. When you break them open, they drip out like white, milky latex. I wonder if that's related. I just thought of that. Anyway, so something that's hygroscopic, like honey, attracts water. It draws water to it. And it's also a humectant, which means it retains water. You know, sometimes you see the word humectant like with shampoos and conditioners, which is bullshit, but you know, they like to use those words. Anyway, that's why, like, if you put honey into baked goods, it keeps them really, really moist. Things like sticky buns or, like, that honey cake you eat at Rosh Hashanah, which is coming up. If you've ever eaten that, it's always really moist. It's full of honey. But if you leave it out and water gets into it, it can make it moldy. So you want to keep it tightly sealed up in a jar as if a hurricane were coming. So we kept the honey on lockdown, same way we were on lockdown. And I thought, well, this way, if the storm blows off the roof, the honey will still stay dry because it's now in these tight little jars. You know, even if nothing else does. Roof blows off the building, everything gets soaked, honey's still good. We could sit there with spoons eating it. And I also thought that another factor of honey's another property that honey has is... A, it's an antibacterial. So let's say there was some blowing glass and I got cut. Oh, I could have smeared some honey on the cut. It's also good for burns. Okay, it was a hurricane. We weren't going to get burnt, but something bad. Oh, a candle. Let's say I had a candle and I got burnt. Okay. The other thing is that honey was also used by the ancient Egyptians and in the Middle East to embalm their dead. Yep. So not to be really morbid, but think about what happened after Katrina. This storm could have been a whole lot worse. Okay? I'm just saying. Sometimes it's good to think multi-purpose with these things. Things could have gotten ugly. So anyway, it's hygroscopic. And you know what, you want to know what else is hygroscopic? Well, it's very interesting to note that other hygroscopic substances include sugar, which we knew that. If you've listened to my show, you know that sugar attracts moisture. Sugar actually is a liquid in granulated form, which is a crazy concept to think about. It's like glass is still a liquid, but it moves so slowly you can't see it. Anyway, sugar, glycerol, ethanol, methanol, diesel fuel, all hygroscopic. Sulfuric acid, methamphetamine, who knew? Hygroscopic. And all kinds of salts, including table salts, all hygroscopic. So that would be an excellent trivia question if you were ever playing trivia with somebody. You could list all those various things, you know, honey, meth, sulfuric acid, salt, and you could say, what do they all have in common? And I bet that nobody would get it unless they were a chemist. They might get it. Now, of course, none of it happened. There was no catastrophe. We didn't have to embalm any dead. I didn't get any cuts or burns. I didn't even really get hungry because we were snacking all day. But it could have been. There was no catastrophe. We got some rain. A few twigs fell down. Not too bad. Not in my little corner of Brooklyn. However, out on Long Island, my brother-in-law, different story. They lost their power. They still don't have it back. My friend in Baltimore Beach lost his power. Still doesn't have it back. No power. And when my brother-in-law redid his kitchen a year ago, Mr. Smug Green Guy decided to take out his gas stove and put in an induction burner. Oh, because induction burners are great. They're a lot less polluting. They use electricity. They don't generate any greenhouse gases. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. That's great. But that means when the power grid goes down, you can't cook, buddy. Ha ha. If you still had your gas range in your house, you could still cook. So guess who's been eating cold food for almost a week now? Mr. Induction Burner. If that were us, with our gas burners, we could still be eating. So actually, they've been eating outside on their gas grill. So it's okay, but I wanted to stick that in there in case he's listening. Of course, he doesn't have any power, so we can't listen. No internet. We never lost any power. Like I said, we had all that food, all that water, so much water stashed away. We had food. We had plenty of beer, flashlights. We had the hand-cranked radio. We had extra cash, and you know, in case we had to flee and we had to revert to a cash economy because, you know, the system went down. All that stuff, we were ready. Survivalist mentality. After living through 9/11 and the blackout in New York, we're set. We've got it. Better to be prepared, right? But we didn't have to use it. So along with packing up all the honey, basically, what did we do? We sat around. We ate a lot of popcorn, drank some beer. Did a good purge of the old clothing. That's important, along with the fridge purge. And watched many episodes of American Pickers. Which is not a bad way to spend a potential natural disaster. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about honey. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. If you're a fan of this show, you're always welcome to leave comments, you know, on the Heritage Radio Network website. We like the comments. I love to hear from you. We all like to hear from you. Keep in touch. You can also find the show on Facebook at Why We Cook. And I've been saying this for many, many months now, that there are big changes coming, and big changes are coming. Starting September 13th, I will be launching my new show. I'm not going to tell you the name or anything about it, but you have to listen. It's coming up. September 13th, the new show premieres. Okay? There will be no more Why We Cook. I'm sorry. It's going to change. We all have to make changes in our life and adapt, and it's time that you and I moved on to the next level of our relationship, which is the new show, September 13th. But we'll have Why We Cook up until then. Okay, this is episode 97. You'll still have 98. 99 is the new one, I think. Or maybe 100. I can't remember. Anyway, it's coming. And I think you'll love it. So it's going to be okay. We're going to go through it together. It's going to be okay. You can also always find all 97 episodes of this show and every other Heritage Radio Network show on iTunes. And they're free, and you can podcast them. Take them with you, put them on your iPhone and your iPod, put it in your pocket, and you can listen to us wherever you go. You'll never be without a Heritage Radio host in your ear again, which is maybe good or bad. I don't know. I think it's good. Okay, so we were talking about honey because I finally bottled all my harvested honey over the weekend during the big storm of the century that wasn't not here. I don't mean to diminish it at all because I think there are plenty of people suffering. And actually, several towns up in the Catskills are completely underwater, including one where I almost bought a house a few years ago. We thought, let's sell the little bungalow and move up to the Catskills and buy a really nice house on a river up there. And that town is completely underwater now. So, whew, dodge that bullet. Anyway, a while ago, I talked about honey, because there had been an article, a very long article in the press about China and how China dumps fake honey on the U.S. market. Well, it was back in the news again last week because they're still doing it. But I guess there was a big crackdown on it finally. And what the Chinese have been doing, because they had a big colony collapse issue too a few years ago. You know, you've heard about colony collapse disorder here in the U.S. And we're still not really sure what causes it, but the thought is probably that it's been caused by pesticides, untested pesticides. And in China, they were using a really lethal pesticide on their bees, and they basically killed them all. So they didn't have any more honey. So what did they do? They took corn syrup. Yeah. Corn syrup and sugar syrup and added some coloring and some flavoring and turned it into fake honey. And then they would fill 50-gallon barrels of this fake honey, and they would ship it to a second country, not the U.S., but to another country, a country with, you know, not very good customs inspections and food inspection. So it could get into that country easily. And then in that country, it would be rebottled and packaged and labeled as a product of that second country. So places like Argentina and Korea and Vietnam, all these places, even places that don't have any honey industry of their own, that don't actually produce any commercial honey, they were doing it there, you know, with the help of the corrupt Chinese merchants. So the fake honey was getting labeled as honey, product of, you know, X country, and then being sold in the U.S. at a much lower price per pound than domestic honey producers can get for their product. So not only were we getting all this fake product in the country, which is terrible, but it was undercutting the American honey producers so much that they couldn't sell their product. So it was just kind of evil all around. And that's like a tragic shame. That's like a horrible, horrible thing, because there are these legit, honest beekeepers and honey suppliers who just want to sell their product, and they can't because people want to buy the cheaper stuff. I mean, especially we're talking like industrial, you know, gallon size honey used in food service and in commercial bakeries and in, you know, Honey Nut Cheerios, stuff like that. I don't think they're buying the artisan honey from, you know, the local beekeeper for that. So when you're out shopping and you're looking to buy honey, don't buy it in the supermarket. Buy it from someone you trust. If you can't buy it right from a beekeeper or at a farmer's market, go to a store that buys from local beekeepers. Look for stuff that says, you know, product of wherever, product of Brooklyn, product of, you know, where some local town where you live. I mean, you know, the best answer would be keep your own bees. But of course, that's ridiculous because not everybody can be a beekeeper. I'm shocked that I'm a beekeeper. I never thought I would have bees here in Brooklyn. But, you know, buy from someone you trust or from a store that buys from people you trust. I mean, that way we won't be supporting the bad stuff. And, you know, in your tiny little way, you'll be sending a message to China that we don't accept the fraud and corruption in their food system anymore. There are some great things about China, but they're not so good with following the rules when it comes to producing food and international business. So anyway, really good honey is like a precious substance. It's an amazing thing, and it's worth seeking out, and I think it's worth paying for. And, you know, you're going to pay $10, $12 a pound for the good stuff because that's what it costs, but you only use a little bit of time, and it's totally worth it. And, I mean, you spend that much on good cheese, more than that on good cheese. You know, you go to Fairway, you're going to spend $15, $20 a pound for really great cheese. So seek it out and buy it. And, you know, there's a huge range of color and complexity and levels of sweetness with honey. It's not just, you know, that wildflower blend that you get on the supermarket shelf. There are honeys that are really, really dark, almost like molasses, and there are honeys that are really light, and there's everything in between. And the darker ones I actually really like buckwheat, because they're not as sweet, and they have some kind of tannic and bitter qualities to them. And I really like that. And I like to add those to foods where I want to add a little bit of bitterness, like a little darkness to them. Like sometimes I'll make chili and I like to add a little molasses to the chili. But a buckwheat honey sort of serves the same purpose. It adds a little bit of sweetness tempered with some bitterness. So it's not cloying, but it adds like a dark, mysterious undertone to the food, like a dark stranger. It's like when I make caponata, you know, which is an eggplant preparation from Sicily, I always add a little cocoa powder to the caponata, unsweetened cocoa powder, not like Nestle's quick, you know, real unsweetened cocoa powder. It adds like a little dark mystery and depth to it. And I also really love to use honey when I make vinaigrettes, because I think that your basic vinegar, oil, Dijon mustard combination benefits from a little bit of sweetness. And honey is great in there because it helps to emulsify along with the mustard, because it's sticky and it helps act like an emulsifier. And it adds a sweetness that isn't one-dimensional. You know, adding sugar, plain old granulated sugar, has a very one-dimensional sweetness. Until you cook it and it caramelizes, you're not going to get much depth from it. But honey's already got the depth in it. And, I find also, like, when you cook, you're always looking to balance out flavors and sort of maximize your flavors and, you know, get all those five flavors, you know, in harmony, the salty, sweet, acidic, bitter, umami, all of those. And sweetness to me is sort of this undervalued part of flavor, but if you balance it out correctly. Now, you know, unfortunately, the American palate tends to be trained to appreciate salt and sweet the most, and in a really kind of one-dimensional processed flavor kind of way. But if you can get away from that and you can use sweetness as a flavor enhancer, the same way we use salt as a flavor enhancer in food, you know, you can use sweetness without tipping the balance, without making things too sweet. And there are ways of doing it by caramelizing foods, of course. You know, if you roast a vegetable and caramelize it, or you sear meat, you're going to get that. But let's say you're cooking or you're making something that's not cooked or not seared or not caramelized, you can add a little bit of honey to it, and that will add that kind of caramelly edge to it. You know, especially I find things that are acidic, like vinegary, lemony things, that little drop of honey kind of just softens the edge of the vinegar and like just tones it down a little bit. So, like, here's a good example of this. You know, I like to sort of scavenge at my job. You know, I teach at a culinary school, and there's always a lot of just leftover stuff laying around. And so on Friday, before, you know, the end of the world storm, we happened to be doing sushi day, and we had a lot of mise en place left. You know, mise en place is what we prep out before we begin cooking. And there was a lot left over at the end of the day. Now, not like raw fish. I'm not going to take home leftover raw fish because everybody's touched it and it's been sitting out. But things like finely julienned cucumbers and daikon and cooked rice. And there was some cooked crab meat, some smoked salmon, like little scraps of stuff. And so whenever I teach that lesson, I always like to pack all that stuff up and take it home. And I make what I call a scattered sashimi salad. It's kind of a take on something I ate in Tokyo once, which was just like that. It was rice with like all kinds of stuff scattered all over it. And so I brought all that stuff home, and I thought, well, this is good because the power's bound to go out this weekend, and this way we'll eat this, you know, the first night before the fridge gets too warm, and then we'll be great. But the power never went out, and we actually had enough to eat it twice. So, you know, I'm setting up this whole salad, and I make a little vinaigrette, and I have this grapefruit vinegar that I really like. So I was using that, and I have some yuzu powder. Yuzu's a Japanese citrus fruit, and this yuzu powder that I totally forgot I had. So I used some of that, and I put some oil in. But it was very acidic, and I needed some sweetness. And what did I have sitting in front of me? 25 pounds of honey. So I whisked a little bit of honey in there, and then I added a little olive oil and a little grapeseed oil because I didn't want it too olive oily. And then I tasted this vinaigrette, and it was great. It tasted kind of like a Luden's honey lemon cough drop, which I love and which I could actually use right now. You can hear that in my voice. But what the honey did was it kind of balanced out the acidity, but also brought out a lot of the like grapefruity flavors. The sweetness of the grapefruit in the vinegar was really enhanced by that. And then that over this sashimi salad was excellent because the salmon and the crab were kind of rich and oily, and this was just like that little ping of acidity that it all needed. And it was fantastic, I must say. And then I topped it with some crumbled nori and some crispy fried garlic and some sesame seeds. And it was really fantastic. And we got to eat it twice because the power didn't go down. And everybody was happy. And it's funny because during a storm like that, my first instinct would always be like, oh my God, I have to make soup, or I have to make a stew or chili, and we have to hide in the bunker, and the storm is raging, and we need to eat thick, hearty things. Let's go kill a deer. You know, that kind of feeling. But it was like 80 degrees and humid outside. So I kept saying, I feel like I should be cooking something in the slow cooker. But it was so hot out. And I kept thinking the power was going to go out. And I couldn't get the slow cooker on if the power was going out. So it was good. We had this nice cold food. And, you know, that's the kind of thing when you're setting up your Michigan militia bunker or planning for the afterlife in your Egyptian tomb that maybe you want to think about. You may not have power. So maybe plan ahead. Think about having some cold food in the beginning and make sure that you keep plenty of honey around for various purposes, not just for food, for wounds, for burns, for entombing your dead. We're out of time, unfortunately, but we'll be back next week with an all-new Why We Cook.
This is a message from Fork and Anger. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anger, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today. The following is a message from NOFA NY. Do you dig local food? Love organic farmers? Do you crave to be part of a growing movement of consumers concerned with the state of our nation's food system? Then sign up today to take the NOFA NY's Locavore Challenge this September. Join 5,000 other New York locavores that are hungry, active, and ready to change our food system. Learn more at www.nylocavorechallenge.com.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.